Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, and joined again by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going?
It's going well, man. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Just looking forward to the draft. I think we're now at the stage where we're all just getting antsy. We just want it to be here. Tired of all these reports and, you know, possible landing spots. We just want some action. I don't know if that's how you're feeling.
Yes and no. I mean, to be honest, the analyst in me likes that the draft is later, you know, these last year or two, because it gives me more time to catch up since I'm always doing so much pro stuff. I always feel like I'm behind. So any extra time is very welcome to me. But yeah, I mean, I'm ready for more things to happen on the NFL landscape. And along those lines, just before we get, we have a really good guest, but before we get to them, the more I watch Mike Williams, Ryan, I don't know that he belongs in that top six. I don't love him.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just kind of view him as a boring prospect and landing spot. I mean, even his potential landing spot in some different mocks I've seen, Baltimore, Tennessee,
you know, Buffalo.
Buffalo. Tennessee's kind of up and coming, I guess, with Mariota, and they got that running game going last year. But even these potential landing spots we're seeing for Williams is not very exciting, I guess. So I don't know, that could make him an undervalued guy if he falls out of that top six. You know, he's not a guy I love either, but
yeah, I think he's clearly six of the six that we always talk about in that top tier.
Right. Well, that's about all you're going to get as far as NFL draft talk today. We're going to move back to the established NFL players, and we've got an awesome guest. I'm excited to talk to one of my favorite people, Scott Barrett from Pro Football Focus. Scott, how's it going, man?
Hey, Ryan, Matt, thanks so much for having me on. Like I said before the show, I've been listening to you guys since the first podcast. I'm a huge fan, so really awesome to finally get on.
Yeah, it's long overdue, I'd say. So I'm excited to talk to you today. We exchange tweets and DMs a lot. You're always teaching me something, and I know that you've got something big to teach us all today. You've got this new metric you came up with. The article dropped recently on Pro Football Focus, and I know there's a few more upcoming articles to follow. Tell us some information about actual opportunity. What is this new metric you've come up with?
Yeah, so this is my baby. The introduction dropped today, Sunday, the 9th. Gonna have a deeper dive into the running backs out on Monday, the 10th, then wide receivers the next day, then tight ends the day after that. The short answer for this, if there is one, it's just a way of building expected fantasy points. And then once you compile that, you can see how valuable each player's role was for fantasy purposes last season. And with that, you can see who was very efficient, who wasn't very efficient, who was just about average. And then looking at that, you can see who might be due for some negative or positive regression the next season.
Scott, I'm really excited to learn more about this. But I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I assume you plan on doing this every year. So maybe 10 years from now, you could be like, boy, Aaron Rodgers' tight end is always consistently, you know, highly productive. Or this coaching staff gets a lot out of their number two receiver. Or, you know, I would think that you'll find trends year after year.
Yeah, so I did it last year, but no one really knew who I was yet. So it kind of flew under the radar, which worked out for me because it's blown up this year for sure. But I have 10 years of data already, and that's something I hadn't considered. So there's a lot of time left in the off season. So maybe it's worthwhile just to break it down by, you know, Aaron Rodgers wide receiver one, Aaron Rodgers wide receiver two, things like that, instead of just looking at the specific players themselves. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I didn't mean to make more work for you. Sorry. But I mean, I was sitting here thinking, you know, Shanahan Kubiak style offenses always have that X receiver that's Andre Johnson, Brandon Marshall, you know, that you could do trends like that too. Like this style of offense really, really does a great job with their top receiver. And so, I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I'm always trying to figure out ways to inject this into my work more. The plan right now with PFF is to do this as a weekly piece during the season. And I think the ramifications for DFS purposes are going to be huge. You know, you just look at something like actual opportunity points per game over DraftKings salary as a easy way of finding undervalued guys, things like that.
Makes sense.
So Scott, you said it's basically building an expected fantasy points. Are you talking per player or per position? Do you start with the position and then address individual players? How did that work?
So let me just tell you a little bit about how I came to develop this. I hate red zone, like anything, red zone carries, red zone targets as a way of determining fantasy value. Last year, there was some guy, I can't remember who specifically it was, but everyone's like, oh, he had all these red zone targets. His quarterback loves targeting him in the red zone. But if you like dug deeper into it, he had like two end zone targets, three targets inside the 10, and then like 18 targets between the 11 and 20.
Right.
And
target a receiver at the 18 yard line is not the same as three yards deep in the end zone.
Exactly, exactly. And for running back specifically, so the expected value of a carry on the 1 yard line is about 3.25 fantasy points. And then on the 2 yard line, it's about 2.5, and it just keeps going down until you get to the 10 yard line, where there's pretty much no difference between the expected value, basically the chance of them scoring a touchdown there on the 10 yard line and on the 33, the 42. So really, anytime anyone uses a red zone carry stat, just tell them that's garbage and to just use goal line carries instead. But even then, that doesn't tell the whole story. So I came up with this and I liked it, but I realized I was just basically creating Mike Clay's OTD stat, which is great, but you know, it's been done. He did it and he did it really well. So this was, again, 2 years ago. So I had someone ask me on Twitter, they were like, okay, so Devonta Freeman scored the most fantasy points among running backs, but how valuable was that role? Was he just hyper efficient? What was it? And how did he compare to the other running backs last season on a per game basis? So I built out the average fantasy point per target for a running back is X fantasy points. The average carry for a running back is Y fantasy points. And just multiplying carries by that, targets by that, I built out a very simplistic, so he should have scored this much. And then I looked at it and I was like, no, this is terrible because I'm not looking at carries inside the 10, inside the 5. And then I remembered I had this other stat I kind of made, and it like a light bulb just went off. And I have this 10-year data sample from PFF, which is for baseball, like that's not that great, but football is really lagging behind baseball in terms of metrics and statistics. So a 10-year data sample is huge in football. And so I have this data set. And basically what I did was I looked at every single carry at every down and distance at every line of scrimmage. I looked at every target from every line of scrimmage and the air yards on each of those targets. And using this 10-year data sample, I built out expected fantasy points from that. So let's say we look at DeAndre Hopkins getting a target on the 50-yard line and the air yards on that were 18. Going back 10 years, there were, let's say, 230 specific examples where a wide receiver got a target with that many air yards on the 50-yard line, and the expected value from that was 1.8 fantasy points. And then what you do is you just add that up over the course of a season, over the course of a week for a specific player, and this tells you how many fantasy points the average player would have scored. And then based on that, you can look at efficiency. You can see, oh, who had the most valuable actual opportunity for fantasy football purposes. And I think that's super valuable.
Wow. That is pretty deep. Scott, I can already tell I'm going to need to read this article a few times, which is a good thing. So you mentioned you looked at carries and targets from every down and distance, from every yard line. What other data encompasses or what other data goes into creating that actual opportunity number?
So it's pretty much just that. So for wide receivers, you look at each target on each line of scrimmage with each average depth of target. And then for running backs or for runners, not just running backs, you look at each carry by each down and distance, by each line of scrimmage. And then you could merge the two, the rushing and the receiving actual opportunity. And that's how you get the total sum for that. I thought about doing special teams work as well, but the more I dug into it, figured it's like not really worthwhile at all. Like Tariq Hill, if you like add all of his kick returns and punt returns, would have only given you an added 2.68 expected fantasy points, because kick returns are returned for touchdowns only 0.76% of the time, and punt returns or touchdowns only 0.87% of the time. So it's like not really something I found to be worthwhile to even include.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot more work than it's worth on that one.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing too, is like in DFS, people were recommending like, oh, play Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs defense, because there's a really good chance he can score a touchdown, when that's super rare. And I really don't think Tyreek Hill is going to score 3 special teams touchdowns next year, although he is a fantastic player.
Scott, so is this metric predictive? How are you viewing that? Is it just taking a look back on the 2016 season or even the past 10 years of data, as you mentioned, or can we use this going forward as we make draft picks in redraft leagues, MFL 10s, dynasty, or even DFS leagues?
Yeah. So it's stickier year to year than raw fantasy points, which is huge, which is crazy. Like that never happens with a stat. And it's certainly better than any other expected fantasy point kind of metric that I've ever seen before, or anything else anyone's doing with air yards or what have you. Is it more predictive year over year than raw fantasy points? So predicting fantasy points year over year, it's not. Actually, last year it was, through 9 years of data. And I was like so overjoyed. And this year, for whatever reason, it just kind of tilted back and it's just barely not. But still, like the thing that typically is best at predicting fantasy points is fantasy points. This is the next best thing, which I think is still like super, super meaningful, super valuable. And honestly, it turned out to be much better than I had even hoped for. So
you can certainly see what styles of players put themselves in the best opportunity to score fantasy points.
That's right. And it goes back to what you were saying before. A lot of it is role, scheme, coordinator, game script, quarterback, things like that. So that's all super valuable too. But yeah, some players, regardless of even what team they're playing on, tend to show up really highly in this metric year over year.
Scott, you said you were planning on making this a weekly feature on PFF. What do you envision doing with that? Again, is that going to be predictive as far as these are the players who have maybe the best potential actual opportunity coming up this week, or is it more looking back at the previous week?
Yeah, I'm so, so excited to do this in season. You have no idea. Last year, I tried to do it each week, but my laptop's terrible and it would just crash and explode and burst into flames. But I figured out how to do it to work it so it's much faster to run on a weekly basis. So I'll actually have time to do it this year, it looks like. And what this means is, so for DFS, right, salaries are based on this specific algorithm that is mostly just how many fantasy points that player has scored recently and how many fantasy points that defense has given up recently. And what this statistic does is it just looks at the opportunity. It doesn't look at efficiency. We can see that by contrasting it with the actual, you know, fantasy points scored. But if we don't do that, we just look at the opportunity. It shows us, hey, this wide receiver is wide receiver 5 in actual opportunity, but he's wide receiver 15 in fantasy points, and he's wide receiver 18 in DraftKings salary. So what this is telling us is, unless this wide receiver just sucks and he's just inefficient, or his quarterback's bad, or maybe he just had a really bad schedule to date, this is telling us, target him, because volume is king on a week-to-week basis, always. Carries, targets, near the end zone, air yards, things like that. That's what you want to target, and that's what this is showing us. It's saying, hey, unless this guy is just really bad, his quarterback's really bad, then he's due for some serious positive regression, and you could make some money this week.
Let's get into some of the specific positions a little bit, and we'll start with running back. As you were going through this data, putting this all together, did you learn anything specifically about, I guess, last year's performances that really surprised you?
Yeah, so, you know, all offseason it was zero RB. Like, I was an idiot for saying, you know, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm just going to grab guys that I have projected over other guys. And they're, you're an idiot. You're ignoring positional value. Running backs get hurt so much more frequently, blah, 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 blah. But I wrote this article on bell cow running backs, how I want to target running backs who see at least 66% of the snaps, 66% of the carries, 66% of the targets. I want those game script proof bell cows who just see massive workloads. And that's really what I went in the drafts targeting. I had a ton of Ezekiel Elliott, a ton of Le'Veon Bell. David Johnson, I think I missed on him, but I argued that the opportunity was there. So what we saw last year in the year of the zero RB was running backs making a completely dominant resurgence. Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson each outscored the next scoring wide receiver by over 5 fantasy points per game. In terms of actual opportunity, they outscored the next closest wide receiver in over 3.5 points per game. And not just that, but it was historically high. Le'Veon Bell's actual opportunity points per game was the highest by any player this past decade. David Johnson was second best this past decade.
Wow. So the top two in the last 10 years happened this past year, and both are going strong. And I would imagine, I mean, Ryan, I mean, we don't talk a lot of redraft, but I got to think Bell and Johnson go ahead of Elliott in most redrafts coming up, don't you think?
Yeah, I would. Scott knows the NFL. Yeah, he knows the NFL 10 ADP better than I do. But yeah, I would imagine those are probably the top two picks.
And I think these should be. You're going to hear arguments that, oh, wow, that's crazy high. That means that's they're due for regression. And you know what? You're probably right. But the top two this past decade, that still means factor in regression all you want. They're still light years ahead of anyone else.
And they have a couple things in common, too, in that they're both the rarity that are the 230-pound guy that also is an elite receiving back. So that, I mean, that builds in some buffer, too, that – if you're up in the game, you hand it to them to where a team's down and you know, play a 4-minute offense. If you're losing, you're throwing to them. And then they also have aging quarterbacks where you might get that Elway, Terrell Davis feel where we need to take something off Ben and Carson's plate and put it more on Bell and Johnson's, which we already have seen. Although Bell's line is far better.
No, exactly. I mean, I'll agree that injuries are a concern, especially for Le'Veon Bell, but that's what it comes down to is targets. Since targets became a stat, both Bell and Johnson ranked top 15 in targets per game among running backs this past season. So just huge workloads as receivers for sure. And if you want to break it down even further, you can look at it like David Johnson had 103 targets, 77 receptions, 843 yards, and 4 touchdowns. DeAndre Hopkins had 25 more targets, 6 fewer receptions, 12 fewer receiving yards, and the same amount of touchdowns. Like, you're getting basically a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 for these guys, and they're also top 3 in rushing production.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I guess that makes sense why they're top of the list of these top 10. And the third guy on the list for running backs is Melvin Gordon. And I just wrote an article that was not fantasy related saying, who would you rather have going forward, Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley? I mean, in real football. And I lean towards Gurley because, you know, both these guys are now in LA. They're both in the same draft classes, obvious comparisons. One had a great rookie year and a terrible second year, and vice versa. I still am going with Gurley. And this kind of affirms it to me was Gordon was good and he broke out last year, but his numbers are better than his tape and his opportunities better than his tape, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to begin to speculate on who I think is the better talent, but just for fantasy purposes, Gurley's kind of capped as a receiver, especially now that they brought Dunbar in, who's probably going to work that, Chris Thompson role. And then with no Danny Woodhead, I think sky is the limit in terms of opportunity for Melvin Gordon. I think you're going to see a lot of what he did last year, where he finished third among running backs in actual opportunity ahead of Ezekiel Elliott, which is going to surprise a lot of people.
I was shocked Elliott was five.
Yeah, so what hurt him was he wasn't really heavily utilized near the end zone, or at least not as much as you might think. He ranked outside the top 10 in carries inside the 5, inside the 10 and 20 yard lines per game. He only saw 2.47 targets per game, which ranked 38th best among running backs. That's huge for running backs, is the value of targets and seeing a lot of targets. I don't know why they didn't use him more as a receiver. PFF loved him as a receiver and pass blocker coming out. He ranked third best in receiving yards per target last year. But something that also might have hurt him in this study was he was hyper efficient. He led all running backs in touchdowns per carry when in the red zone. He ranked top 5 in yards per carry. He had the 5th most efficient fantasy points over actual opportunity score of any running back this past decade. So I think he was just hurt a little bit by efficiency there, where it capped his opportunity numbers.
And certainly his line didn't hurt, but you had a good point that I just wanted to expand upon a little bit, that this time last year, all the draft nicks were saying, boy, Elliott's a great runner, but he's a rarity in the receiving game. You know, he's great in protection. You know, he can come right in and be an instant contributor in the receiving game. And sort of an underreported story was, as a rookie, he didn't make all that much of an impact as a pass catcher. And I guess you could look at it as an optimist and say, well, he didn't get any worse from a year ago. It's probably all to come. Or you could look at it and take a step back and say, maybe this offense just isn't going to dump him the ball that often.
Yeah, and it's hard to project if that's going to change. Scott, one guy I was surprised to see on there, on that list of top running backs, was Lamar Miller. I think most people view him as having a disappointing season his first year in Houston, but he cracks the top 15. So what helped him, or I guess boosted him onto that list?
Yeah, so he just really saw a high workload in general, and they didn't really take him out too much near the end zone, but it really was a very disappointing year for him, especially when you look at how good his offensive line was in terms of run blocking. I think the Houston Texans ranked top 5 or top 7 in yards before contact per attempt. So really he had a lot of room to run and he just wasn't very effective, which is weird because in Miami, we were all clamoring for more of an opportunity for him because he was so hyper efficient. And this year it seemed to be the reverse.
So Scott, when dynasty players are looking at this data, obviously this is kind of more year to year, but for those players building long-term teams, how can they use this information specifically at the running back position?
So yeah, I mean, we can look at this list and we can say CJ Anderson's a guy whose dynasty value has plummeted on the back of multiple years of injury, but still, you know, last season he saw a pretty high workload. He ranked highly in actual opportunity. He ranked top 5 in carries inside the 5-yard line per game, top 5 in red zone opportunities per game. You know, Devontae Booker was really ineffective throughout the season, posting 0.5 fewer yards per carry than Anderson. So maybe he's a guy to target. Volume is typically stickier than efficiency year over year. So who knows, maybe this is an indication that he could see another big workload if he manages to stay healthy, something like that. Or we could look at LeSean McCoy, someone who people thought were going to show up much higher in terms of opportunity, but really he didn't. And again, that was another credit to his offensive line. Buffalo's offensive line ranked first in average yards before contact. But I mean, we saw Gillislee too. He posted one of the best yards per carry rate, 12. Don't have the exact numbers, but one of the best yards per carry rate among any running back ever with 100 carries. And you can just say, you know, he's due for some regression. He was just hyper efficient. And the volume really wasn't as there as a lot of people might expect. So
what's interesting to me is there's 15 names here of running backs, and there's one that doesn't look like the others. And that's Theo Riddick. You know what I mean? If they all walked in the room, Theo Riddick would be like, he doesn't belong here. You know, like, he looks like a wide receiver. He's not an every down guy. He's not a goal line carry player. But it really is a credit to what a receiver he must be then.
Yeah, yeah. So that just goes back to what I was saying before about how much more valuable targets are than carries for running backs. I have it somewhere. I'll probably pull it up. But it's just so much more valuable that really – that was big for him, and he was heavily utilized as a receiver near the end zone as well. So that paid off for him for sure. I don't think that's going to remain constant next year with Amir Abdullah coming back from injury, but yeah, that was another one that surprised me for sure.
Do you mind if I tell some people about a friend of ours? I want to tell everybody about Loot Crate. If you listen to this podcast, you should be pretty familiar by now. They've been with us pretty much from the beginning, a great sponsor. But if you are on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month, and it's even cheaper when you use our code, which I'll tell you about. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if it is you that are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and a new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or a loved one. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things. It's a great series, by the way. Batman, The X-Files, used to watch that all the time, and Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones' Alias Volumes 1 through 4. So here's what you do. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. And when that cutoff happens, it's over. So you make sure you head to www.lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint, enter the code dynastyblueprint, and you will save a couple bucks off an already cheap subscription today, thanks to our friends at Loot Crate.
All right, Scott, let's move over to the wide receiver position now, and pretty much the same line of questions. What did you learn going through this data about this 2016 performances?
I learned that Antonio Brown is my wide receiver one and Odell Beckham's my wide receiver two. They finished top three for the third consecutive year, the only two receivers to do that. Brown's been a monster. His 2015 season ranked top five in fantasy points by receiver all time, as did his 2014 season. His 2016 season wasn't as productive. He ranked 63rd all time, but he did that in only 15 games. What was his actual opportunity score dropped 2 points in 2015, but it was his most efficient year over the past four seasons, which is kind of incredible considering the numbers he put up. Odell Beckham was kind of the opposite. He dropped a little in efficiency, but pointing out to Eli Manning's kind of decline as a passer, every Giants receiver was inefficient, below average last season. But the volume is still there. He's still a monster. No wide receiver has ever averaged as many fantasy points per game over their first three seasons as Beckham. And he paces Rennie Moss, the number two guy, by over two fantasy points per game. At his age, what he's doing is just incredible. I think those are my top two guys for sure. After that, it gets a little murky.
Ryan, is Odell to you still clearly the number one asset in Dynasty? And this, helps affirm it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He's still number one for me. I think most people view Mike Evans as the number two Dynasty asset. And Scott, I want to hear from you on this. This is interesting. Evans actually ranks number one on actual opportunity. For you, it's clearly Brown and Beckham. What sets them apart from Evans?
Yeah, so I think it's Brown and Beckham, then Julio, then AJ, and then Evans for me in redraft. In Dynasty, it's different for sure, but that's how it is for redraft for me right now. He was the entirety of this offense. It was he dominated in air yards per game. He finished with more than 39 air yards per game over the next closest wide receiver, which was Julio Jones. It's really hard to describe just how huge of a difference that is. That's the same difference between him and Julio Jones is the same difference between Julio Jones and the guy ranking 28th in air yards per game. He also led all wide receivers in targets per game and end zone targets per game. End zone targets being where you're targeting a receiver while he's standing in the end zone. And this is kind of in line with what we saw in 2015. He ranked third in air yards per game, 10th in targets per game. Basically, he was just the entire Tampa Bay passing offense. He ranked first in the NFL in target market share, first in touchdown market share, first in first down market share. But I think this, and again, this is a massive opportunity, but opportunity is always tied to the roster and play calling and things like that. Tampa Bay just got five games out of Vincent Jackson last season, and he looked cooked. There was little to no depth behind him. They finally just added DeSean Jackson. So I see that actual opportunity decreasing and maybe hopefully a little bit more efficiency for Mike Evans, who just posted the worst yards after catch per reception rate of any wide receiver with at least 1,000 receiving yards in the past decade.
So the obvious question I'm going to send to both of you, does DeSean Jackson hurt or help Evans?
I think it has to hurt his overall numbers as far as PPR points. Like Scott said, maybe I could definitely see Evans getting a different type of targets. You know, if we assume DeSean Jackson's going to get some of those deep balls that have, I don't know, I guess less of a chance of being complete. Those are some of the passes that Evans is seeing, and you know, maybe he's not necessarily the type of receiver to make the most of those targets before the catch.
Yeah, I think it helps his efficiency numbers, but volume, it was just so incredibly high on the back of multiple receiver injuries. And you had Austin Seferian Jenkins, who was supposed to be the guy. He went down. Brate kind of took on that role, but I'm hearing whispers that he might draft another tight end too. And then Humphreys isn't really a reliable wide receiver three. It's just so many different guys. It's not just Jackson. I think they're going to add another guy or two as well. But just all that being a factor resulted in these monstrous volume numbers that I think are going to regress pretty significantly. What do you think, Matt?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the targets can keep up, but he's obviously a great player. The thing that isn't mentioned a lot with Evans is when he came in the league, he was remarkably young too, you know? So, I mean, him and Winston, I look at Evans from a dynasty perspective and just think this guy's going to catch so many touchdowns in his career. You know, he's so young. He's got the young quarterback. He's got the obvious body type to do so. They target him at all levels. I guess it hurts him, you know, just because he's not the only show in town.
Well, I know some people, and Scott, you may be one of these. I know some people are concerned about Evans' efficiency numbers. And
listen, I'm not, because again, the efficiency numbers were bad, and I posted a bunch of stats about this, and I had a lot of people coming at me, and they're like, "Oh, are you saying he sucks?" And I'm saying, no. I'm not. I'm saying this is exactly a product of what he was last season. He was the heart and soul of that offense. Defenses treated him as such, but he had to be. Listen, if you have anyone saying, "Oh, Mike Evans isn't worthy of a top," I don't know where he is right now, top three, top five dynasty asset. He was PFF's number one graded wide receiver last season. I don't care what efficiency numbers you look at. He was exactly what they needed him to be, especially as evident by the first down market share and touchdown market share numbers. He was great.
So Matt, I guess I would say this. I think Evans is the number two dynasty asset, and I think he's closer to Beckham than he is to number three,
whoever that is.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I could buy that. I mean, I don't think he's going away.
Scott, so with this metric, actual opportunity, is that something that you can use to compare across positions? I know you mentioned that both Bell and Johnson outscored the highest scoring wide receiver, which is Evans, by I think 3.5 or 4 points. Brown and Beckham would actually rank, it looks like, behind both Bell and Johnson, as well as Melvin Gordon. So do you use it to compare players across positions like that? And if so, is that affecting how you're drafting in your MFL 10s right now?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I can't pull up the stat right now, but it was a super down year for tight ends. For wide receivers, I think We saw 7 wide receivers total over 18 actual opportunity points per game in 2015, but we only saw 1 in 2016, kind of hinting that maybe there should be more of a regression there. And the big thing was, again, going back to zero RB, where just running backs in the first 2 rounds, you're an idiot kind of thing. But this is exactly what we've always known with fantasy football. There's these – so what Sean Siegel, you know, author of Zero RB, he has 3 running backs going in the first round of his rankings. And it goes back to – he deemed Bell, Johnson, and Elliott the Uber backs. And this just goes back to what we've always known with the position is, yes, I think they're riskier in redraft and dynasty due to injuries. But the upside – wide receivers can't match that upside when you have a guy like Johnson and Bell seeing wide receiver 3 targets and then ranking top 3 in carries per game. You're not going to be able to match that as a tight end or a wide receiver, but it's that delicate balance of injury risk, shorter lifespan, things like that, that you have to take into account. But for sure, and this bared it out last season, is that the opportunity was much greater for these guys like Bell, Johnson, Melvin Gordon, Murray, Elliott. So yeah. And then also going back to your point on Theo Riddick is maybe he's a guy who you can get super, super late and fill in on one of your zero RB teams.
Makes sense.
Scott, let's move now to the tight end position. The thing that stands out here is that Rob Gronkowski, who we all view as the tight end one in redraft and dynasty, did not crack the top 15. I know you had to play a minimum of 6 games, and I believe he did that. So what was it for Gronk that kept him out of that top 15?
So he finished 20th, which is a major departure for him. He ranked top 4 at the position in actual opportunity per game in each of the past 5 seasons and first in 2 of the previous 3. He was still hyper efficient. He led the position in fantasy points per game over actual opportunity per game. He didn't have enough targets to qualify this season, but since joining the league, he has 2 of the top 3 and 5 of the top 15 seasons by that same metric. So he's one of those guys where, like, whatever his actual opportunity numbers show up, you still have to adjust for insane efficiency levels that he manages to reach every single year. But yeah, this is the first year since 2011 that he failed to finish among the top 2 tight ends from a fantasy point per game basis. But he is at a disadvantage here because we're looking at point per game numbers. Due to injuries, he didn't start in week 3 or in week 4, and he played just 7 snaps in week 12. But if you exclude those weeks, he would have led all tight ends in fantasy points per game by 4.8, which is a massive number.
Do either of you have any reservations whatsoever of making him your number one tight end redraft reasons? I don't. I mean, I think he's
clear. He's mine. And for whatever reason, he keeps going into round 3 of MFL 10s.
Wow.
I have a problem not taking him at like 206.
Yeah, wow. He's still my number one tight end in all formats, basically.
Really? I mean, still in Dynasty, Ryan?
Yeah,
yep. I don't blame you.
Scott, another guy who stood out to me here on this list is Ladarius Green. Between the injuries and the move to Pittsburgh, I think a lot of people are way down on him, mainly due to those injuries. He only played 6 games, which was your minimum for qualifying, but he did crack your top 15 list, even with just those 6 games. So that's a little bit of a surprise. I think people in Dynasty and really in all formats are really just giving up on him. Should we take this as a sign that maybe there's some life and some possibility there?
So I actually like Ladarius Green, but I kind of always have this issue where I draft injury prone guys. I think it's just, you know, I'm a data guy and it's just like the added variable that I can't compute. So I just succumb to that every single time. But yeah, I like him. I'm adding him in dynasty leagues. I'm a sucker or whatever, but he led all tight ends in fantasy points per snap last season. He was targeted on 32% of his routes, the highest rate at the position. you know, injuries are a major, major concern. But the Steelers didn't cut him, as there were rumors that they might. They brought him back, and this is a great, high-potent offense to be a part of.
Yeah, and they may or may not draft a tight end early. And if they do, I mean, I still think he's the opening day starter and, you know, a feature player that gets a lot of single coverage and a great offense.
So, Scott, you mentioned the schedule as far as these four pieces being released. You gave us a little hint about maybe a weekly series centered around actual opportunity. What else? What's next for this metric as far as PFF and as far as you're concerned?
I think that's it. I might pursue Matt's idea, because I actually really like that. And then maybe I'll try and inject this into some of the articles as well. I think I'm going to do some draft work, some stuff for PFF with that. But the next project I'm really excited about before preseason starts is I'm doing some work on cornerback adjusted wide receiver efficiency stats. So it's basically just looking at which wide receivers had the toughest or easiest schedules based on the quarterbacks they went up against last season.
So regarding actual opportunity, is there going to be a point where we see on PFF, I guess, the full list of players, or is it limited to this top 15 per position right now?
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking to my boss about. I want to get it as a tool on the site. I think that'd be really cool. So yeah, you guys just got to bear with me. If there's anyone you want me to pull up, I can always get that for you. Or maybe I'll just post the full list on my Twitter page.
There was got one guy going back to wide receivers that I was really interested in. I assume he just didn't qualify, but Sammy Watkins. I just traded him for Dynasty, and I love him, and I can't quit him. But he's ultra productive every time he's on the field. Does that hold up over the last, since he's really entered the league? I mean, is he everything I think he is?
So I can't pull his numbers because he didn't qualify without like breaking my computer. and he's always hard to gauge in terms of opportunity, because then you'll get those Sammy Watkins decoy games. But I love Sammy. I'm all in on him in Dynasty. I think he's a phenomenal athlete. And going back to the quarterback adjusted wide receiver stuff I was just talking about, he dominated top 20 graded cornerbacks throughout his career. So if you look at just PFF's top 20 graded cornerback over the past decade, only three wide receivers ever posted better numbers than he did. Wow. And those wide receivers were Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., and one other guy.
Somebody else good.
Percy Harvin.
I expect them to be high. I didn't think it would be that good. I mean, I'm glad I brought him up.
I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, before we wrap it up today, I know you, I mentioned earlier, I love getting these DMs from Scott because he's always got some crazy stat. I don't know how you even think of looking these things up or researching these things, but you do it and you share it with us. Do you have any that you want to throw out just to wrap up the show today?
We can go back to my Brandon Cook stat, which I think is, well, actually I'll give you two. So I just talked about how Sammy Watkins was really good against really highly graded cornerbacks. Allen Robinson is one of the worst, and he's a guy I've been looking to dump on all of my Dynasty teams. I just traded him in the Elite Lemonade Dynasty League. I don't know if you've heard of it. For my friend's entire 2017 and 2018 draft, and I was ecstatic to get that. I thought that was awesome. But yeah, so on 60 career targets against top 20 graded cornerbacks, Allen Robinson has caught only 20 for 193 yards and one touchdown. Among all 116 wide receivers over the past decade to see at least 40 such targets, Allen Robinson's 0.76 fantasy points per target average ranks second worst, ahead of only Darius Heyward-Bey. And this is a guy I've been tracking for DFS purposes for a while. I do this reoccurring article each week on wide receivers we want to target in DFS based on weak cornerback schedules. So if a guy is going to get shadowed or see the majority of his targets against like a Demarius Randall, we want to have high exposure to him. And Allen Robinson, for two years in a row, has shown up as one of the highest guys on my list in terms of disparity, cornerback sensitivity. Like, he dominates really bad cornerbacks. Like, he dominated Charisse Wright last year, but he sucked against all like actually competent cornerbacks. And maybe this is just noise. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a small sample, or maybe it's just that, or maybe it's Blake Bortles related, but really it's telling me that there's a good chance. Maybe he's just not a wide receiver one kind of talent.
And that's true. Even in 2015, his, you know, his quote breakout year,
especially true. Yeah. That's why I was off of him in 2016, is because if you look at it, his fantasy points per target against top 25 graded cornerbacks was among the worst in the league. But then against bottom 25 graded cornerbacks, that's where he saw like 39% of his fantasy points on 10% of his targets.
Wow.
Very cool. Then one last one, and then I'll let you guys be. But just because I want to hear Matt's thoughts on this. So Brandon Cooks ran a 4.33 40-yard dash against all cornerbacks who are faster than had a 40-yard dash time at their combine of 4.44 or better. He averaged only 1.65 fantasy points per target. Against all slower cornerbacks, he averaged 2.91 fantasy points per target, by far the highest on my sheet. And this discrepancy of 1.26 fantasy points per target was massive. It completely blew away the next closest wide receiver, who was John Brown, who had a difference of 0.57, another speedster, 4.34 40 times. Do you think, Matt, that this is something that we should be worried about, that maybe he's just this deep burner, and that's why the Saints looked to replace him with Ted Ginn, another deep burner, and thought he was expendable? What do you think?
Interesting. And first of all, it blows me away that you actually did that study. I've never That's awesome. And if I were you, I would write a nice little letter to Coach Belichick, and maybe he'll hire you to be his receiver geek and Cook's personal trainer guy, you know, and how to use them. And hey, that dude ran a 4.51. Let's match Cooks on him, Coach. You know, I mean, and who knows? Maybe Belichick knows that. And see, I'm not avoiding your question, but I think what's really interesting is, you know, the Saints dump a guy, and I think that Breeze and Peyton basically say, give us average receivers and we'll turn them into something. You know, like, we're going to be really good on offense as long as the two of us are running this ship. If you're rocking the boat, we're going to move you out. We don't want to pay you a year from now. We need the pick, that's for sure. But they traded him to a team that's even a better reputation. You know, that if anyone's going to use Cooks correctly, you got to think it's the Patriots. And I think he's going to be a combination. Randy Moss is the wrong example because they're not anything close to the same body type. But I think he's going to be a combination of deep threat and maybe even Edelman's replacement / complement. I think he's going to get a lot more underneath patterns in his new home than he did with New Orleans. So I'm not sure I answered your question, but I think they have to have him. I'm just knowing that team, they have a plan in place for this guy.
No, I think that's a great point too. He actually said right after he was signed that he looked forward to running more routes from the slot this year, which I thought was super telling. Belichick's known for replacing guys a year early, and Julian Edelman's coming off his least efficient year in terms of yards per target, fantasy points per target, wide receiver rating, which is just passer rating when targeting that wide receiver. So yeah, maybe he's the look to move him to the slot more. Who knows?
The one other thing I just want to mention about slot receivers, you know, specifically with the Patriots, is I don't think a lot of people out there realize it's almost a totally different position than being an outside receiver, especially in terms of punishment you take. I mean, not only those guys, Welker and Amendola and Edelman, are they high volume guys, but they're getting hit by linebackers and defensive ends and defensive tackles. They're not getting bumped out of bounds by a 5'9", 190-pound corner. You know, I mean, they take a brutal, brutal punishment. And I think you always, and the Patriots do this better than anyone, have to keep thinking that whoever our top slot guy is probably isn't going to be here long.
That's a great point.
All right, Scott, that is a ton of great points from you, a ton of great information. Yeah. I could listen to those crazy stats all day long, except I have so many Cooks and A-Rob shares, so I'm a little a little bummed about that. just tell me that you could find one of these discouraging stats for every player. Can you do that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could write 1,000 words on why Nelson Agholor is amazing and why Odell Beckham Jr. sucks. It's just this obnoxious internal debate in my head at all times. That's the life of a stat geek, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about those two guys now. But anyway, besides that, thanks for joining us today. Just some great stuff, like I said. And I encourage everybody to check out your actual opportunity series. And before we do wrap it up, though, tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter at Scott Barrett DFB. Stands for Dude Fantasy Bro. And find my work at Pro Football Focus. Oh, also, I have a podcast called The Power Hour DFS, and check that out too. Thank you.
Yes, that is excellent also. All right, thanks again, Scott. We'll be back next time with more Dynasty Blueprint.